right. Welcome, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danier, and I am owner of Youngstown Computer. We're doing this business show and trying to sort of engage with the business community and get information out about anyone who is either an aspiring entrepreneur or a current entrepreneur. We'd really like to kindle up the entrepreneur spirit here and not only give the information away, but to also physically partner with the people who are the practitioners and doing it actively out in the marketplace and making them stronger and their companies able to do more and produce more and hire more and just create more value. We meet with a ton of small businesses, so we have a really good handle on what makes the people behind the activity tick, and a lot of the things that either frustrate or get in the way of progress are pretty much the same. And we hear the same stories over and over again. I just feel like if it was more open, if we had a bigger platform to be able to talk about this kind of stuff, a little easier, then I think we can help a ton more people out. And that's what the intention of this program is. We're also going to actually partner and couple with a bunch of businesses and very publicly sort of display what we're doing with them, because we're going to help a ton of people through this process. And so if you aspiring business and you need need some coaching or some information, you guys are been great about contacting me off air and during the week, and I've talked to maybe five or six of you already about the different stages of where your business is, and I'm telling you that what makes someone break out and want to do something on their own, sometimes it's they've got this product that's just amazing. Sometimes it's they've got a bunch of money and they want to find out a way of doing something themselves, and they're looking for a product. And there's a thousand different variations of what inspires people to do this. And it gets the reputation for being difficult, and it gets a reputation for being so pressure oriented it breaks the soul. But it really doesn't have to. The principles on their own are pretty simple, and all it takes is being able to be a leader, sticking to those principles even when they get hard, and really having the intention of making things better. Because when you go to the marketplace and your intention is to add value to everything you touch, you can't help but be successful. So if you are a person that reduces value of everything that you touch, then there's a possibility that things in your life will become less valuable every day. So that's what we want to avoid, is shaking down the valuable things until they are no longer valuable enough to support you. And then guess what ends up happening? Well, you have to go somewhere else to find something of value and just shake that down too. But if you have if you keep your water source pure and you keep it pristine and you reciprocate, the philosophy is that you will never run out of people, customers, resources, and it'd be in a constant cycle of growth. And I talk to a lot of people on the phone and do these interviews, and one of those things when people do business or start a business is they always have a reason why they can't go any further. They think that the thing that they don't have is the reason that they can't go further. And I want to spend a ton of time to dispel the myth that one thing you're lacking is not what's getting in your way. There are a few exceptions. So if you're courting an industry that requires $1 million machines and lots of capital, then sure, you can make the claim that a lack of resources in the financial department is what's getting in your way. And if I just gave you money, then you could put this stuff together. But the rare exception is most small businesses are not in that capacity. They're not really. They think they don't need. They think they don't have enough money, or they need money. But reality, it's not. I mean, business is sort of like an input-output machine. You put things in, and you get a product on the other side. And you get to cultivate what the machine does over a period of time. And you put different stuff in a different order, and you get a different product. And so the entrepreneurs change the recipes of what they put in until the product is something they could be proud of, something that adds value, and something that people like. Because you got three choices. You could have you could be happy, and your customers could be happy, right? So if you two are happy, if you provided a product at a price and someone paid for your product at a price and both of you are happy, then you're doing something right. Now, if you're mad but they're happy, right? Well, you're not going to do that indefinitely. You provided a product, but when you're pushing the lawnmower, you know you're only making $10. Where when your lawn mowing's done, the customer's like, "Wow, I got this great value for the lawnmower." But you're like begrudgingly pushing this thing around, and you're really not happy about what you made. You're upset. Now, if you reverse it, and now let's just say that you're happy where you charge the money, but the customer didn't get much value out of what you charged them, and so that they're displaced. I know this is, it seems like it's super simplified, but really this is what makes the marketplace go. And a lot of it, my political bents have to do with, the market forces that either encourage great noble behavior and discourage, regulatory, just scummy, that kind of stuff that usually, you pick a winner is what they call it in the political realms, where you allow someone to succeed even if they do a poor job. You know, you walk into the DMV or you walk into, the post office, and do you get exemplary service? Well, the reason you don't get exemplary service in any of those things because their job or the success of those two things aren't predicated on the customer being served well. But if you go into another business where it's highly competitive and there are five of those stores on the same block, those people have to behave a different way, because if they misserve you, you can take your business elsewhere. And that's a market force that corrects terrible behavior. And so the people who are really good at serving end up escalating and finding success, and the people who are terrible at it go away. And that's what we hope to happen in the marketplace. Now, again, if you have too many companies that are excluded from market forces, or no matter if they win or they get to keep practicing business even if they do it in a terrible way, then that's not the market that I cherish and love. All right, so that's a little bit of philosophy, but if any of you have any questions, you can call all program long. We got an hour to talk about business and lots of questions about PPP, EIDL, and the positioning that we're all taking on the other side of this coronavirus. A lot of us are, we're sort of in a holding pattern. And we're willing to let our business models sort of just kind of hang out there, knowing that it will return. So, but there are some of us that even if it returns, it's going to struggle for a little bit. So there still is enough time to retool the products that you sell, so that when this thing comes back to, in quotes, normalcy, that you might be in selling different things in a different way, because you know how it's going to be. We can pretty well guess that even when we're all allowed to return back to our normal routines, that there aren't going to be the same customers there, and there aren't going to be the same products there, and there aren't going to be the same habits and stuff like that. So a lot of us are going to have to alter what we do in order to take advantage of what marketplace exists on the other side. So whether or not, you put on your Excel sheet that if we start coming back in June, here's what I'm going to do. And if we come back in July, and as you start, getting closer to these breakout months, then you can start considering like what you're going to do. Are you willing to wait 9 months to return to normalcy? And I'm not. I mean, I'm right now we're doing emergency calls, but I've already begun to start building, other parts of my company, so that those things, normally I wouldn't be able to put so much time into new stuff, research and development. And so I am able to do that now. And so, I might have parts of my company that compete with my primary parts as that comes around, and I might even like them better. And so a lot of you out there will have the ability to position themselves. And that's what I'm going to call it, is that when we look forward and say, here's where my capital is right now, how much money I have in the bank now, that's going to erode as we get further in the future, right? Everything's, deals that you had set up, contracts that you had set up, some of those things won't come back the way that they are. And if you've got an order book of insurance policies or stuff that's regular residual stuff that comes in, those people will probably be a little bit safer, because they either are still paying those premiums or paying those fees. But some of us, it's a render service, get paid type of operation. You don't render the service, you don't get paid. And so maybe right now is a good time to start inventing something that's a little bit different than your other model. It's taught a lot of us, taught us a lot of things. I mean, and I'm not going to lecture anybody on the preparedness for a pandemic, because nobody in the world would have considered this. But, you know, how many of you miss a couple of, you know, your receivables come to a halt and then you're just dead in the water. You can't pay anything and you're gone. So how much savings, how much retained earnings, how much buffer should you have? I mean, fortunately, in our business, we've got like 3 months worth of buffer that is already built into our receivables. So if operations ceased right now, money would continue to come in for about the next 3 months, even if we didn't do any replenishment services, right? And so I and that money that is coming in right now, that was pushed into that pump a long time ago. Like it sits in that system and it just marinates for 45 days or whatever it does, and then it comes in. Well, during my grind years, I had to put that money into the system, not expecting it to come and pay today's bills. That was achieved, like there were 90 days before that I got zero return, zero payment on while that cash sat in the system. And where you kind of hate all of your money tied up into the pump. I mean, it's beautiful now because it becomes a beautiful buffer between something like this happening. So let's just say you don't have that buffer. You don't have those savings. You have liabilities that are far reaching, but you don't have receivables or assets to be able to catch up with them. Maybe you plan more to be your own bank, or you have lines of credit. Well, and let me warn you against this. I had lines of credit, right? I had a couple of lines that I paid monthly fees on to make sure that they were deep enough to pay for things that, you know, I saw would be important to me if things dried up, and that they were quick enough to respond, where there wasn't like paperwork oversights and signatures, where I can make a draw on my line of credit and push it right into an account to be able to cover something in really short order. Well, as soon as this stuff started happening, those lines of credit were put on hold. I was not able to draw from them. So you got to be careful too with your safety nets, what you have your faith in, and when you actually need it. Is a bank going to be your friend, or are they going to be working against you? And in this case, this bank sucked, and I will not be doing business with them now until Armageddon. But local bank like Farmers, they were amazing. And we do our primary banking through them. And when I first got in business, I was shopping around for different banking, and it was recommended to me that you know, Farmers was really good, and some of their products were a little pricier than everyone else, but they were really good, and they tried really hard on the customer service end. And so I said, that's good enough for me. I mean, you know, all of us entrepreneurs, we have stuff that we're super good at, and then stuff that we know nothing about. And old school entrepreneurs would know what going into it, the stuff that they were going to farm out to people that they trusted, and then they knew what their wheelhouse was. Today's entrepreneurs, they think they're good at everything, and they try to do everything, and they're just a different animal. And so if I could take your group here, and you know, if you think you're smart enough to know something, you have to know your competency level, whether or not you should be doing something or you should be hiring it out. Especially in my field, where, you know, technology, if someone tries to tinker on technology, you know what ends up happening with tinkers? They love doing it, but they really make it a very expensive deal for themselves, because they're trying to save themselves money, and they're trying to, they think they should be able to figure it out on their own, but they end up making it worse than it would have otherwise been. Because a lot of times, if you call in the expert from Go, right, they can make it painless. But sometimes if you try to fix it, your fix has to get undone before the expert can fix it. And I've known that to be true, whether it be, I tried to do my taxes one time, the dumbest thing in the world. So, you know, go to taxes, and I'm like, I will just take last year's taxes, right? They did the taxes. Not much has changed except for different numbers. And I'll look through my numbers, and I'll see what they put, and I'll just update it for today's numbers, right? Duh, right? That's something that you just don't play with. That was a very expensive try to save myself a couple $100 on filing my taxes, because I thought I was smart. So we all do it. I mean, it's one of those things where until we get bit by it, it seems like a pretty good idea at the time. But I'll just tell you that when you know your competency is pretty far up there on the entrepreneurial philosophies. So I plan on talking a little bit about EIDLs and this round of funding. If all of you are kind of waiting on the two government SBA programs that are intended to help businesses get through whatever void we're in right now, we have the PPP program that got another round of funding. I think almost $400 billion was assigned to prop up the PPP and also the EIDL. The value of both of these programs is, one, the Paycheck Protection Program, the PPP program. You basically go to a credit union or a bank that you already have and do business with. You fill out an application. It's not really a hard application. It's a two-pager. And then you supply some documents, the checklist of, you got 940s and 941s that you fill out. And basically those are, if you had employees, they're what they're looking at is they're finding your payroll expenses, because the whole point and purpose of the program is to get some of these people that are on unemployment, that are sort of really putting pressure on state unemployment system, pull them out of there and let employers become the unemployment, right? And so, you know, the goal is to keep people's paychecks right where they were before everything happened. And so they look back at your what appeared on your W-2s over 2019, make an estimate of what it would cost in payroll to be able to float your employees for a period of time. And they pick 2 months, 8 weeks. Basically making you a loan that would be forgivable at the end of the term if you follow certain procedure. So I'll make sure that I give a little bit more detail, but the PPP, it will be opening up on Monday. So if you haven't done so yet, make sure that you check with your bank and make sure that they're accepting applications and get lined up with that, because it's a pretty valuable program if you're in need of getting and some funding to kind of keep some normalcy as we go through that. But we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff business-wise. If you have any questions, you want to talk about anything in the business realm, 330-729-9977, or you can text me at 330-333-1570. You're listening to The Bottom Line Business Show here on 570 WKBM. I'm Joe Danier. All right, welcome back. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I'm Joe Danier, and we're talking about things that are happening in the entrepreneurial sphere, everything that we're dealing with, and this is going to be a very interactive show where we get out into the actual marketplace and start dealing with people. We do it very publicly. We make deals with them. We bring our own money to the table and our contacts, and we're trying to inspire that entrepreneur spirit in people who aren't doing it and also help people who already are. 330-729-9977. Let's go to Jack. Jack, you're on the Bottom Line Business Show. How you doing?
Good. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, stay safe. Listen, Joe, really, really like your program and all that you do. You had mentioned both PPP and the EDRL. And back on April 8th, I applied for an EDRL, and I got my nine-digit number, and it said, we will respond to you via email. In the order, it might take a week. Well, it's been since April 8th, and I've not heard anything. And I know that this was before, you know, they ran out of money the first time. And I was just wondering if you had any experience in that, or if you've heard of anybody getting them, or, you know, what I should have done. Because I did it online, as opposed to, because my bank branch was actually shut down.
Okay, so the EIDL, did you do the long form or the short form?
You know what? At this point, I don't remember. I did actually have to have my tax return. I put my, my EIN in and everything.
Comprehensive. At the end of it, they gave you a sort of like a confirmation code. Any idea if you know that started with a digit of 2 or 3?
It started with the digit of 3.
3. Okay, so you're in the clear. There's a whole lot of long forms that got lost and people had to reapply. But if you got a 3, that you got in under that. Now, I think if you filled out the long form, they're asking people to also fill out the short form. So you might want to do that anyway, and they'll combine the two sheets. But if you would go on the SBA's website starting tomorrow, put another one in. Now, what they're doing is they're taking those applications and they're sending it out to different areas to be able to process. So they're not following any kind of method as far as how they get processed. We put ours in on the 30th of March. About 3 weeks later, we saw a hit on our credit Experian, and then about a couple days later, they deposited the advance, which in our case we got $1,000 per employee, so we got $7,000 part of the grant portion. And then since then, it's been nothing to hear from. They I know they ran out of money, but they're supposed to then be getting in contact with people and having them fill out a portal. They'll send you an email that says click on this link and create an account. And once you create that portal account, it'll show you how much you're qualified for. And then you submit whatever you're qualified for. And then you go to a loan officer, and a couple days later, you get an approval.
All right. Well, so April 8th, you did yours approximately 9 days before. I will just try to sit and be patient here.
Okay, I'll lay out a little bit more of the timeline in the next segment, too. So stick near your radio, and we'll get to that.
Thank you,
Joe.
All
right, no problem. Thanks, Jack. Appreciate you being out there. All right, we're going to take a break. 330-729-9977. Text me at 333-1570. You are listening to the Bottom Line Business Show here on 570 WKBN. Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is the Bottom Line Business Show. I'm Joe Danier, and we are teaching and preaching about business philosophies, helping aspiring and practicing entrepreneurs to do their thing with a little bit more intensity, growing up these things so we can have tons and tons and tons of local small business employers. When they say it almost becomes a little cliche that we are the backbone, and I really think that all of the big corporations get all the glory, but really we are what makes this thing tick. We are nimble. We're the innovators, and the big companies follow our lead, and we're just we're a great force, and could be if somebody put a bridle on us, we could do we pull some heavy loads. So 330-729-9977. Let's go to Jonah. Jonah, you're on the Bottom Line Business Show. How you doing?
Hey Joe, good. How do you do?
Good.
All right, I was just calling in today. I don't really have much of a small business, but what I wanted to call in and ask you about was I've been investing a lot of my money into real estate, and I wanted to ask if I'm not taking any handout loans from the government, is there a way I can get that to have an impact on my credit score?
What part being an impact? How you
Excuse
could,
me.
What do you want to see if it has an impact? The loans you have?
I wanted to see if I am not taking a loan, is there a way I can have that impact and get that to reflect a little bit better on my credit score?
Yeah, unfortunately, credit's based on, the credit score is based on how many liabilities you have with an institution. I guess the only safe play is if you can get something that has 0% interest and let it go for at least 6 months and then pay it off is a way to kind of work the credit system so that you at least get a trail of having paid something with diligence without having the exposure of having a liability that you couldn't cover. Other than that, there's not much more of a way.
Okay, I see what you're saying. I have just opened up a line of credit with 0% interest for 6 months.
Boom, that's perfect.
So now you're saying let that go and then pay it all off at the six-month line, or how should I go about
that?
Yeah,
there has to be reporting of 6 months worth of consecutive, like, having something. Are you talking about something that's unsecured, like a credit card? This line of credit, is it a loan that's secured on something? Is it, like, on a mortgage, or is it just like a credit card?
No, yeah, this is just a credit card.
Okay, so yeah, you want the credit card to be able to report, having paid off the balance at the end of every month, and so you don't incur any interest no matter what. So if you put something on there, you pay it off, then they report to the credit bureaus, and then you have some history. You don't have to keep a balance on there in order for it to report.
Oh, okay, thank you. That's real enlightening though, because I was not. Honestly, I was not ever quite clear on how it would affect if you paid it all off or if you just kept making the payments.
Yeah, credit cards are a little bit different, that they will report it, that you carried a balance, and then that you pay it off after the statement cuts, you incur no interest, and then you're golden.
Okay, I see. So, like, with this line of credit, I am putting a a steel roof on a house. So you're saying go ahead and do that and then pay that off in a month to 2 months, pay it off completely, and then use that card again.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. Thank you. Thank you for the advice.
Absolutely.
I will work with that. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Jonah. Appreciate it. And as far as, you know, carrying debt of any kind is a risk. And really the only kind of risk that I'm comfortable with is when I have the exact amount that I need to pay for that liability in cash, right? So if your goal is to grab some history with someone who extends you some credit, have the cash there. And if you're responsible enough to keep it there until the thing is paid off, then so be it. I believe in the intelligence of the people who want to better themselves, right? I'm not going to feed into our weaknesses and say, as soon as you put 10 grand in an account and then you put something on a credit card that you're going to go spend it, you're better than that. You know the difference. If you go spend that, then you just created a negative pit of liability, right? If you sort of look at my work history, I leveraged debt from the very beginning. I have a very strategic methodology, but I will tell you, I have just totally wasted thousands of dollars in interest through my methodology. Even though I've done it, I can't say that it is the way to go. It's only when you don't have any other ways to go that I would ever tell someone to go out there and create any debt. It's just a dangerous tool. If you're not 100% responsible, it could be a dangerous tool that could. In this case, I've heard and read about a ton of more people who do real estate that just get most of their. There's a lot of wealth that can be created, but there's also a ton of liability that come along with it. So you have this straddling. You have a lot of assets that are vulnerable, and you have a lot of debt that are super vulnerable. So you just got to be real careful when you're playing that game. But if you do it smart, business credit's hard to get started. Very few people, will extend it to you if you just get into business. So you got to find ways of creating a credit history so that when you do need something, it's a little easier. And I know that you got. Professionals on both sides of this equation that swear off debt, and there's some people who I know that totally swear by debt. And I'm somewhere right in the middle where if used as a tool, I'm willing to kind of put up with it, but I am not one to say that you should hang your hat on something that's completely leveraged. There's just so much risk involved in it. So you just got to play a really careful game. But Jonah, thank you for the phone call. Okay, so the EIDL and before I get into that, I had a text message come in and I want to read that real quick. And if you do want to text me, it's 330-333-1570. And this text message says, "Afternoon, Joe. Missed the first part of your comment about the bank you would not do business with until Armageddon. Could you repeat which one is why?" All right. I'm not going to say their name because I don't want anybody to even accidentally give them a penny of business. But they are not a local bank. They are somebody who is national. They don't even have a brick and mortar presence. It's completely digital. There's a financial institution that just exists in the interwebs. So be careful. Just spend all your money with brick and mortar local banks, and then you don't have anything to worry about. But the reason why I would not ever do that again, I carried and I subscribed to a line of credit that cost me $20 a month. And I know they gave me a line of credit of $25,000. And it was under my control from a web portal. So if I needed a transfer out of my line of credit, I could do that at 5 o'clock one day and it'd be in there the next morning. So the hypothetical that something happened and I needed to make a payroll or needed to do something big, I was willing to pay $20 a month to make sure that I always had that ability. And I never had to really use it. And so when we got into this coronavirus thing, this is like the first time that anything ever came close to me needing to use it, and immediately the institution put my credit line on hold. Now, they didn't bill me my $20 for March, but still, don't you think that, that it's kind of like, I have a car insurance policy, and I finally get into an accident, and when I call the insurance company, they do everything they can to get out of what I'm dealing with, right? It's kind of like that, where, come on, this is the reason that I did this. Having a car wreck or getting into the trouble was I was trying to offload the liability to you, and I hoped that it would never actually happen. But if it did, I'm going to call that phone because that's what I've been paying all these years so that you will take care of this for me, right? And that's why I paid. So I felt that situation where, I didn't need it throughout all of this. But if I did, I'd be pretty screwed now. And it would be total thanks to that whatever policy. And I know why they did it. Listen, they're an institution that was interested in doing the SBA loans. They wanted to take all their free capital and they wanted to be guaranteed by the government to be paid back. Right. And they were being given 3% interest, which isn't a whole lot, but it was guaranteed 3. So they took all of their reserve cash and made sure that they allocated it towards what was going to come in with the SBA stuff. And that's what they did. Right. And so it's understandable from a business model. But me as a paying customer, that sucks. And so that's why I said Armageddon could come in. It's not shady business practices. It sucks. It's just not somebody who I want to do business with anymore. So I don't want to mention the name because they didn't technically do anything wrong. I just don't want to do business with them anymore. So thanks for that question. Appreciate it. Okay, so the EIDL and the PPP loans. And I want to do EIDL first because those of the two, that is the loan. This is something that needs to be paid back. And so the government set up a way to create a loan that had a long term at a really reasonable interest rate. So the interest rate's 3.5%. I think it's a 30-year loan, and the first year is deferred, where you don't have to make any payments for a year. And what I'm using, I'm not going to take loan money and then start a new enterprise in the midst of all this. But I will use loan money to kind of, for instance, here's something that happened. So we sell equipment, which means I have purchase orders of things that I purchased and then assembled and built and then sold, right? So I have equipment that I had to pay for that is somewhere within that production chain. And so there's some stuff that is sitting on an invoice, right? Well, I need that cash to be able to replenish the new stuff that's being built, right? And there's lines of credit that contain that stuff that when I get paid on something, I fulfill the line of credit. Well, what I'm using it for is to shore up that that line of or those short-term line of credits that are charging interest and are big balances, and with something that's a little bit more secure, where I know I'm going to be paid for the equipment that comes in. So I just need some time I can call a credit card company and say, hey, would you give me another month? But I could do that every month. That's getting it's a pain in the butt, and it's left room for me to forget 1 month and have to get hammered with non-payment or hit my credit or something like that. And I want to avoid that. So in this case, I'm going to take some of use some of my cash on hand and get rid of that, and then use the SBA loan to fill in that void, because you cannot restructure debts with SBA loans. That's one of the few things that you can't do, but you can use an SBA loan to be able to pay something that you would have paid. So if they audited back through an SBA loan and they saw that you were making payments towards something, this interrupted whatever you were doing. You can use this SBA loan to catch back up on things that you would have been doing anyway. I consider what I'm about to do with this SBA loan part of the program. I'm not going to go out there and refinance something that wasn't affected, because that's just a misuse of the money. So they declared an economic disaster. SBA opened it up, allowed business owners to be able to submit a traditional EIDL loan. I call it the long form. And so a lot of business owners in mid-March, towards the end of the month, filled out these forms. Now, if you were one of these people and you have a confirmation code on submission that begins in a 2, they missed a lot of these applications, and they're asking that you refile. Okay, and then towards the end of the month, there were some that were long filers that got a confirmation code of 3. Now, they are also asking that you refile the short one. So if you did the long form, and it's really, they asked for a whole lot of stuff, and the last caller said that they went through and had to supply lots of stuff from tax returns and proof of business and all that kind of stuff. If you did that, you probably had a long form, and you're better off to go back to this Small Business Association's website and refile and get to the end of the line. I know it sucks, but it is what it is. Now, if you filed and the timeline is kind of messed up, you're not going to actually be able to follow this out. But here are the steps and how they are likely to occur. So the first thing you do is you put a filing in, and then you wait. Now, eventually, on the form, you tell them how many employees you have. And the last question is, do you want an advance? If you answer the question, do you want an advance, that means that you are going to be rewarded $1,000 of grant money. This is something that is not part of the loan. It does not have to be paid back per employee that you claimed on your application. So in our case, we put 7 and we said, yes, we wanted the advance. We waited 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, I think it was the 13th, a hit showed up on our credit report for an inquiry that said Small Business Association. The very next day, $7,000 was deposited, you know, in our account, right? So that's the first chain of events that happens. Application, waited 2 weeks, credit hit on Experian, then the next day got whatever your advance was on the number of employees that you have. After that, now, this is that's where we're at in the process. The rest of this is just basically things that I've saw witnessed in the marketplace. This is how it's likely to occur. And so another 2 weeks, you're supposed to get a portal application. An email comes in with the title or the subject of SBA application, and it says, blah, 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 set up a portal account. There's a link. You follow the link. You go to the SBA's website. Now, you have to follow the link and set up the account that way, because that's what unlocks your portal. And so you fill out the information. When you log into your portal, you're going to have this slide bar. And at the very end of the slide bar is what you're qualified for. The way this works out is you take your revenue from 2019 and you minus cost of goods and you divide it by 2. So that's the basic general formula, that if you take $500,000 in sales and $200,000 was cost of goods, you're down to $300,000 divided by 2. Your slider would say $150,000 is what you're qualified for the SBA loan. And so you adjust your slider as how much you want to request from SBA. Now, I want to tell you this. Anything over $25,000 that you request is going to put a lien against your company for payment. So that's one thing. They're going to basically collateralize your company for the loan. Okay, so you don't have to, I asked, and you're not going to have to make a list, but they're going to, you know, use your company as the collateral against the loan. Any amount over $200,000, they're going to ask for a personal property guarantee. So if your slider comes up with $500,000 and you pick $201,000, then you're going to be asked to supply documents where you're personally going to guarantee. So when I'm offered this, I'll probably be in the neighborhood of like $199,999 just to stay under that $200,000. I don't mind them putting a lien against the company, but I don't want to make any personal guarantees based on, you know, take your house if this thing doesn't wind down. So I'm unwilling to do the personal side, absolutely 100% willing to allow them to attach a lien until this thing gets paid off. So that'd be my suggestion, depending on how much you're going to need out of this loan to, you know, make that as a consideration. So you adjust it, you hit submit, it goes to a loan officer, the loan officer requests identifying documents, and they put you in different phases of approval process, and then it's pretty quick beyond that they deposit whatever you request in the same account that they do the advance. So that's the timeline. It's been taking people probably between 30 and 40 days to get this thing from start to finish. So have some patience there, especially now the loan applications will be opening up on Monday, so there's going to be a glut of people even applying. So when we come back, I'll give you a little bit more about the PPP as well. All right, you're listening to the Bottom Line Business Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Bottom Line Business Show. I am Joe Danier, talking about things that are happening in the entrepreneur sphere. And in future episodes, I mean, we sort of planned this program when we knew that we could go outside and do stuff. And then as we started getting restricted, sitting down and having meetings is a little bit harder. We're talking with 3 or 4 businesses now that are pretty good candidates for being able to coach through, bringing in my expertise. One of them is going to be an interesting thing. And remember, these business is all about negotiating, right? It's about being able to hear somebody out what they have a problem, you have a need, lining up your need with their problem, and making a suggestion about what you can exchange. Sometimes it's information, sometimes it's money, sometimes it's favors, it's anything that you're comfortable in dealing with. Well, one of the companies that we've been having talks with, we're in the stage of opening the books. So we're going to be going into a profit loss statement, and we are also going to go into a balance sheet. Through these three documents, or through these two documents, we can get a really good insight into the financial health of a company. And so if done right, then you can really see income outgo. You can see where your problems are. You can see what you own and stuff like that. Now, the reason you start there is because sometimes when you get to profit and loss and balance sheet, one doesn't exist. And sometimes you can discover the financial problems have a lot to do with just incomplete data. And one of your first moves is to create the correct way of doing certain things. And so this first company that we're doing, they've got great products, great salesmanship, and they don't have the cash flow to be able to go to market. They're not a direct-to-consumer, so it's a harder sale, and so that they feel starved for cash. And so we're going to implement, and we're going to jump into their company and start seeing and digging through what the true the true ailments are, because it usually isn't what people think they are. And that's why I started out the program with that, is you might think that it's a lack of money that's starving you out. And again, there's exceptions, but usually that's not the rule. But with this investigation, we'll probably be able to exchange the services and equity as long as the company can support an equity holder. So owning equity in something that has value is a fair trade. If you own equity in something that doesn't have any value, then, or at least value that is not worth or equal to the time that you're going to have to spend, then sometimes it's a retooling or a reshuffling or, you know, totally redoing, or sometimes taking down the foundation and blowing it up and starting from scratch and everything in between. So a couple of these companies are we're going to exchange where I don't necessarily think they need my money. I think they need my expertise. I think they need my technical expertise. I think they need my organizational expertise. But once we get a feel for that, then we'll see if a time investment is going to be, you know, worth the exchange of equity or not. And then the rest of them are small businesses who are single operator LLCs that sort of like their sole employee, and they're the owners and they're the marketers and they're the accountants and all of that stuff. And because when you get in that spot, you don't have time anymore to spend on anything else, and you get stuck. Right, you want to grow, but you can't, because you can't hire because you're working, and you can't, hand it off because there's not enough money because you need it all. And then when it gets stuck, they can't grow, and they need somebody to come in there and start taking the hatchet to things and pruning back some of the areas, create some time and space so that you can hire some of these things out, get the owner away from being the sole operator, and start running a small business in that capacity, you know, in running it more like an actual small business. That honestly, the business I could take the owner out of the equation and put some labor or put some person, some skill set, some talent in that same spot, and it still operates as a business. And sometimes that's a bigger undertaking than finding capital or finding market or doing stuff like that. Text message. Let me read this. This got separated in a couple different, so let me read this real quick. Thank you for your reply, Joe. Just wanted to make sure it wasn't something concerning my local banks I deal with. Thanks again. So PPP, and yeah, that was the answer to EIDL. That's just a waiting game, and I appreciate the question. The PPP is going to be something that you're going to want to do with your local bank. I did the application directly through the SBA's website for the EIDL. I went to Farmers Bank for the PPP, and I did everything via email. Didn't have to talk to a person, didn't have to go to a branch. I emailed our account rep. They put me in contact with the person who's processing loans. They sent me some email attachments. I've filled it out, printed it out, scanned it out, sent them back. And again, I was stupid through it. So they had to send it back a couple times, which, you know, you receive 1,200 emails, or I'm sorry, 1,200 applications, and you got one dude that can't figure out how to fill out a form correctly. Well, that was me. And I felt so bad about being, hard to deal with. And under normal circumstances, I wouldn't feel bad. But when you know someone's already taxed out on trying to get these things, and if I would have just slowed myself down, I could have done it properly. The problem is everybody puts us in this constant state of go fast and then do nothing. And I felt like when I got the request, I had to fill this application with lightning speed or I was going to miss it. And I was fortunate that they weren't like every time I made a mistake, sent me to the back of the line, because that could have happened. And that's one of the risks of taking this too fast, even though it feels like it's justified having to go fast with all the complications that everybody are suffering. So, all right. Thanks, everybody, for the phone calls and the text messages. I think this is going to be a really valuable asset going forward in this mode, and we plan on bringing a ton more of these very public discussions about what happens in the business community. We're going to talk about these things that are important to us business owners to help us get through some of these things. All right, we're going to take a break. I'm coming back with the Youngstown Computer next. You've now listened to the Bottom Line Business Show on 570 WKBN.